You're listening to The Buzz with ACT IAC, where we explore the intersection of government and technology.
Welcome to Highlight. From disaster relief to life-saving research, we understand that emergency relief requires an emergency response. When disasters strike, from weather events to pandemics, government agencies can and have depended on Highlight to support their loan relief programs. Learn more about Highlight technologies and our grants and loan capabilities at highlighttech.com.
I want to introduce Susan Doerr. Susan, if you can make your way up here. And I guess I'll wait for a round of applause because she's certainly worthy. For those of you who don't know Susan, she's currently CIO over at ODNI, and previously was the CISO there, has a long background in information security and bringing together really large groups to get big things done, from Five Eyes to DOD to, you know, lots of groups within the IC. So I'm really grateful to be able to have your time today, especially because you are driving 12 hours to Wisconsin right after this, which is incredible. So thank you for taking the time.
I'm so excited about that. So everyone started off with a quiz, and so let's do this. Who knows what a Friday night fish fry is? Oh, there are my Midwesterns. I love that for all of us. So I'll be back on Tuesday. Let me know your cheese orders on the way out the door, or you can just hit me up in Teams. It'd be awesome. I actually do bring a whole cooler with me. It's empty right now. It'll come back, like, literally with more cheese than you can shake a stick at. And for those that know, like, dill butter casein on a grilled cheese sandwich. Oh, my God. But Natalie, I am just a recovering farm girl, so it's all good. I told you I would.
We let her know we'd call her out, and she asked us not to. Yes, we're both Midwest and had a lot of fun talking about shared Midwestern experiences, such as cheese and meats and euchre. Anyways, we'll get into the topic at hand today. So you have such great experience with shared services, implementing and encouraging and getting change management through. What are some of the lessons from your past that you bring forward now as you're starting some new initiatives?
I appreciate that. And again, I want to thank everyone to let me join in on really your community. I've not been in one of these forums before. I love that we have a whole lunch table over there. You guys are great. And so I really appreciate it. I come from a background of Department of Defense and Intel community. So I'm a little bit different here. I feel a little bit of a fish out of a water because some of the conversations on where you're at on some of the shared services, and obviously the awards that were called out for where you're at in the government, it's a slightly different conversation for us in this a little bit more disconnected environment. So I've been in the shared services gig for years, whether it was being an architect trying to drive the highest usage and value of infrastructure services, and so that mission IT and business IT didn't have to, we'd commonly say, roll their own and really allow them to put the dollars into the requirements to meet the actual customer needs. So this has been a backdrop the whole time. But my opportunity to really watch what the difference it can make is during, I think, for especially for the feds, to remember that nice down scope of budget and 11 and 12, how much fun that was. So we had to really make some very hard decisions in the intelligence community of what missions were we going to shirk off. And it was a turn towards those that are geeks like me and say, what could you do to drive efficiencies? And it really brought a whole community of people together because we had to think different. It was an extinction event for ports of mission. So we were given no real choice but to drive that culture change, the technology change, the budgetary change, the way we thought about our contracts, the way we thought about our people, in order to squeeze efficiencies, because there just weren't the dollars to continue to always do it the way we had. So we really recognized across the CIOs of the intelligence communities that we really wanted to eke out infrastructure shared services. And so I'm an infrastructure girl, have been my entire career. I find all of that stuff like super fun. So I might be odd for, especially for a farm girl, who does get up and speak once in a while, Natalie. So I find that stuff really interesting and always have. But we recognize in this community that we had to, for us, really drive out the sets of services that allowed us to get to the biggest premise of our architecture, is to really tag the people, tag the data, audit the heck out of it, understand user activity, because recognize that an exfil from us is not just, it can have life and death type impact. So those were the premise, and we had to figure out how to do in common what was commonly done, because we couldn't meet also the mandates post 9/11 of information sharing in a consistent manner. So we worked through those areas, those that have been around the block a number of times or read any of the rags about us. We call it iSight. It's our IC information technology environment or enterprise and the necessary services of what was important. We had the IC elements who are more mature offer up their services for small organizations to adopt, which was really a game changer across those areas. So again, we had really hardcore foundation, and it made a big difference.
Yeah. I appreciate you sharing that. I think those are really good lessons learned. I am wondering, you know, even if you had the best technology and the best solutions and that piece was solved, what are some issues that would still come up? Because ultimately, we're all human, and we've got to learn to work together.
Yeah, we again, it was a different mindset. We went from anywhere from a culture perspective that I'm a program manager, I'm a project manager, and I want and I need control of all of my budget in order to meet my mission need. And you want me to depend on that? Are you kidding me? And I see some shakes of heads right here in the group who's like, yep, that's the big problem. So we had a big trust issue, just that human trust issue, because at the end of the day, if the mission didn't go well, who was going to be called on the carpet for it? So some of the things that we did to drive some of those trust issues is that the CIOs across the intelligence community went from what sounds bureaucratic to something that was actually highly functioning, which is that we put together a governance structure. And I know that sounds bureaucratic, and we're government, and we say those words. But it wasn't just from that perspective. It was a, how do we get everyone who are in that space to sit down and talk about what's the highest priority requirement? If we only have X number of dollars and we're all going to consume ICAM services, where is the biggest area from our larger architectural perspective? I, at that time, had an opportunity to sit in a CISO role. So I was the IC CISO for a period of time. And we also had to gain the trust of the mission to feel comfortable consuming those services that were outside. There, in our world, so many people who wanted to go down and hug their rack. Oh my gosh, the number of people who left. Mm-hmm, we all know who. And to drive that culture change, and I'll talk a little bit in my CISO language, is to encourage the common control packages, the inheritance and shared controls in order to get to that outcome, to really do that carrot to say, we're not kidding, we are going to set those controls aside, and you don't have to show a test for them. You do not need to go to the place where the cloud is and look at the guard gate guns. We had people who wanted to. You know who we are. You felt that, didn't you? And so that's what we did, is just one of the many ways. Again, the mission side who needed to consume those services because they just didn't have the funds to continue to roll all of their own were able to see consistent messaging, constant communication, transparent state of the services, consistent interaction of that team to say, we've got it, we're working it, we're on it, we're going to get the priorities, and we hear you. So I had an opportunity to watch all of that as a CISO. It was bringing all of the other CISOs together to try to talk about what does a risk really mean from their perspective, recognizing that across the intelligence community, their missions are very different. And it was just profound. You had to step back. I was very fortunate to have an architecture background. And so I was able to put on some of those skills and try to listen, because I recognized the culture of one organization that used certain words might have been talking about the same thing for someone else who said something different. And so I was able to bounce back and step back out of really a single IC element culture into this other part. So critical listening skills was huge, but the building the trust of the mission to consume is something you cannot discount on how much communications and planning and interactions you need to have.
I really appreciate that you brought some of the soft skills into that. I think when you talk about building trust and collaboration, making sure people feel like their value or their ideas, their experiences are valid and you understand them and you hear them, I think is probably the first most foundational key. And it sounds like you really did that.
Yeah, I did at mine, and I got to watch the others before me in those roles. It wasn't just a single personality. It was building a repeatable concept of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah, especially building on those wins. I will say, I think that there's a difference between getting peers, other senior leaders bought into an initiative versus all the users of an organization. And, you know, there's a lot of different approaches. There's the carrot, there's the stick, there's the just be in your face all day, every day. What are some of the approaches that you take to get your organization on board with the changes you're making?
In the prior conversation, when it came down to having people recognize that, especially in an IT world, so again, I am just a recovering engineer. I love this stuff. It's geek all day long. Is that the world is evolving, and that the training is out there. The training is free. Go find new stuff, even if your certain path is, I don't know, a Linux server admin. See, I was going to go there. That there is something else out there, and what is next? Maybe it's complete automation, and so that you don't have to run those test scripts by hand. And so there's always something more to learn, and it's the tips and tricks to become a learning organization, but also valuing those that are unbelievably solid, who keep the lights on, and if they want to live in a data center or the rest, and they're very, very happy doing it, just thank you. Never forget them. Yeah. But constantly learning.
Yeah, that must make a difference too for your ability to recruit. You know, if there are newer people who want the opportunity to really challenge or learn and grow. So that's incredible too. Let's go back to zero trust for a minute. You know, you can hear 100 different perspectives in one conference on what that means and how to go about it. Can you tell us a little bit about your perspective on zero trust and how you think about that with your organization?
So I'm going to go to my notes. I hope nobody thinks I'm cheating here because I want to make sure I do the tenets right. And I won't foot stomp. There won't be a quiz on this. So, but I'm sure we've all read the NIST tenets on zero trust. Because I wanted to have it as almost a different conversation in that space, especially for all of our wonderful vendor partners that are in the room, is to really think through, what does it mean to provide a shared service for you to consume in order to meet the tenets of zero trust? What does it mean to provide what could be a wonderful stack of services that you offer, but to be able to bring them in smaller segments, just because that could be where any given organization is in their ecosystem to get them towards a zero trust requirements. How would you think through, if you look at the tenets of all data sources are considered resources, and so hardcore asset management, change management, all of those necessary items, on a per resource granted basis for data access to data. So it's hardcore ICAM capabilities consistently. But instead of it being a full stack offering, that it is a tear up of a micro segment perspective, because we as an part of an organization may not have the funds or the need to consume everything right out of the gate.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And I also appreciate that referencing back to the tenants gives common language for everyone to work from and goals to look to. So another question I have for you, and this is one of my favorite questions to ask any senior leader, really any person, is if you had a magic wand and you could change something about your organization or the way the IC works together, whatever, what would that be to give this future that you're trying to build towards?
When we were talking about this ahead of time and she asked me that question, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. a taco bar at work. No. Nachos all day long. An old-fashioned bar, because I'm from Wisconsin, so we talk about that. And then I brought it really close to at home. Being a very small organization, so I am not one of the large organizations. I'm the CIO for internal OD&I, so we're a small. The benefit of the shared services we consume out of the large organizations are profound. The work that happens on enterprise agreements, enterprise license agreements, so thank you for those who have been done the work to broker on those agreements on our behalf has been a speed to mission. But if you ask me in a very, like right in front of my face, the thing I wish is just enough seed funds to consistently bring in the next suite of shared services for my mission and business to consume. We chatted and someone would come back and say, well, why don't you just ask for all of it? And I said, well, I don't have the ability to absorb all of that all at once. I need to think through very hard of not just the fact that I can deliver technology, but I have to get people to consume it. And if I overwhelm my mission side so fast on the amount of change, they can't program it. So that's where I'm at. And we all recognize on the Fed side that we need a little bit of seed funds. Whether you're consuming an external shared service, you still have to attune and attenuate your own infrastructure in order to consume it. Or if you're building or buying your own, is you still need that in place while you're running legacy in its area. So that's what I wish for, is just a recognition that we do have to have a little surge of funds to get us into the next place. But as that new modern thing becomes normal, we shut off legacy, we use those funds to O&M, and it's the next thing on.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And kind of hitting on the human rate of change that you've got to work through, right, at any given point in time. So another question that I love to ask is, as a vendor personally, if there are folks in the audience who maybe don't do work with OD&I today, but would be interested in, what can they do to come to you prepared to have a valuable conversation when you walk away from going, that was really worth my time?
I'm just going to reflect back and probably say it just with some slightly different perspective for the vendor partners, because I know all the feds are like, yep, we can't change too fast. And yep, people still hug their servers and they want to see their racks and those perspectives. But for the vendor partners in the room, because we are all at a different place and a different rate of change, you may have the best stack for X, Y, and Z, but I may not be able to consume it that quickly. So I would love to hear how any of your wonderful ideas can come in and help me fill this gap right now as I start and continue to modernize. Because there's always going to be a modernization question. I personally, as a CIO, don't like to be too specific in a whole platform at any given time, because I have to worry about future change and I have to future-proof myself. So when I have my partners come in, the vendor partners come in and talk to us about how we can help you meet that, it's the ability to say, I get that I have a whole security stack and I do everything the best that there ever could be. How can I have just that chunk right now? And then how would I build upon that? And where is my greatest value in order to get there from here? That's what I would desire.
Yeah, it almost sounds too like there's an encouragement to collaborate with other vendors in the space and figure out how you can integrate and work together to provide a whole solution for the organization.
Well, that's our reality.
Yeah.
From a budgetary perspective, we can't just tear, or even from a timing and change perspective,
yeah,
we can't tear it all out. We have, no matter what, we have to do integration conversations. We have to.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I'm going to open it up. We've got 5 or 10 minutes for audience questions. And so if you've got something you'd like to jump in with, please raise your hand.
If not, I can tell you where all the Dunkin' Donuts coffee shops are between here and Chicago. Because I have them all mapped out on the toll plaza. Like, there's one in Ohio, there's two in Pennsylvania. It's like a thing.
Hi, Tim Rund, Advocacy Group. Are you familiar with the previous effort at the ODNI? So it was called the ODNI Intelligence Community Shared Services Roundtable. Dan Chenick helped set it up with Jennifer Crone, and it was at the bequest of Stephanie O'Sullivan and then later Sue Gordon. If you're not familiar with that effort, I think John Marshall can tell you a bit more about it because there are conversations going on. It sounds like you should be part of that.
Yes. Okay. So I am not Jennifer Crone. She was initially asked to be here, so she had a hard conflict. And so I'm not her. But yes, I had an opportunity to be in some of those conversations, again, as a CISO during those areas of really the other perspective of how to drive consumption and lower that authorization bar, not lower because we didn't understand the risk, but to be able to consume services without it being as burdensome.
I think as the conversations go forward, you should be at the table with this other group. It sounds like
I would love to be.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. What kind of custard do you all like? Because I'm just going to go right to all things Wisconsin.
Hey, Susan, Jason Miller, Federal News Network. Since you brought up EyeSight, can you give us an update of where EyeSight is today? How's it being used? Any of the kind of, since we're talking shared services, it is a good success story. Any new capabilities that you're able to talk to coming out in 2024, and anything you can share?
I would prefer that question would go to the ICCIO.
Okay.
I am a consumer of those services. And so the benefit of like the network work as more clouds come into our ecosystem is profound from the seat I sit in, because then I don't have to have the depth of staff and skills in order to achieve those outcomes. And they're doing amazing things.
Hi, Costas Torregas with the George Washington University. An area of intersect between the intelligence community and universities is training and educating the next generation. I heard mentioned Five Eyes that you may or may not be involved in, which is five English-speaking countries primarily. At the academic level, we've begun discussions with our English counterparts that do cybersecurity and AI and privacy research, and with the Australians and with the Canadians. And they all have their kind of institutions that get together on the Five Eyes platform. Is there any discussion about how to network kind of academics together so they can support a unified vision of Five Eyes?
I do have to say, we actually talked about this. I'll let you think for a second while you. I started diving into Five Eyes and cross-country partnership and shared services in that way, and basically became so complicated so quickly we decided it was a topic we would avoid. But I appreciate you bringing it back up.
So my involvement with those is what does it mean to do responsible and safe sharing? Because we have some common missions in order to achieve outcomes. So it was as all of the other nations are working through their concepts of shared services, we're all on this journey, is what does it mean for us to do like cross-boundary trust without having to have an ISA? Oh, I'm going to go into hardcore geek stuff. ISA at every single level. So we've had those conversations. It's been profoundly fun to think through, talk about culture. And just the language barrier, even though it's all the same language, is amazing. I unfortunately don't have any direct insight to help your specific conundrum, which really is all about making sure we have trained people in order to achieve what we need to do.
All right. Well, then we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, so much for your time. Thank you, Sue. This was just phenomenal.
Thank you.
I mean, you are an incredible speaker. So no, round of applause.
That's all for this week on The Buzz with ACT-IAC. Be sure to follow us on your podcast platform of choice to never miss an episode. To stay informed on all things ACT-IAC, follow us on LinkedIn and sign up for our daily news flash at actiac.org. ACT-IAC is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to advancing government through the effective and innovative application of technology. You can support The Buzz and other ACT-IAC programming by becoming an ACT-IAC member. Members get exclusive access to communities of interest, professional development programs, in-person events, and more. Membership is open to all for-profit and non-profit organizations that share the ACT-IAC vision. and is free for all government employees. Learn more at actdiac.org/join. You can also make a tax-deductible donation at any time by visiting actdiac.org/donate. Thanks for listening.